Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Verrill, and today our guest is Rob Brooks, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we're talking about vaccine mandates at work. We'll be discussing how the government has authority to mandate vaccines in work, how to implement a vaccine mandate if it applies to you, best practices to stay in compliance with these laws and regulations while simultaneously protecting yourself and your company from discrimination lawsuits from employees. Rob, thank you so much for joining us today on this hot and ever-evolving topic.
Thanks, Tani. It's great to be with you.
Some of our listeners may not have had the pleasure of meeting you or listening to you speak in the past. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about you and your practice?
Sure. Well, I'm a partner at Verrill, and I've been with the firm just about 30 years now. And so I handle all aspects of the employment relationship on behalf of employers. And so I do litigation, I do advising, drafting documents and the like. And so I have to admit, however, that COVID vaccines have essentially consumed a lot of my time in the last 6 months, as with many employment practitioners.
It's unfortunate because I think for a lot of our listeners, the same thing is true as well. We took all of our plans from an operational perspective, and over the last 18 months, those have been evolving and shifting. And I think even come May or June, where we all had high hopes that we were going to put this on the back burner and start focusing more on operational needs and goals and moving forward, here we are again talking about COVID and vaccines and best practices in the work environment. So we appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to share some of your experience and knowledge and insight concerning this ever-evolving topic.
You bet. Happy to be here.
I think that this is a good time for us to do a little caveat. We're recording this episode on September 13th. So President Biden made an announcement late last week concerning a multitude of different vaccine mandates that would be going into effect in the next, say, 45 days, 90 days, timeframe's unclear, and we're going to be talking a little bit about that. But let's start with just generally some questions that I know are floating around in people's minds that they're trying to understand, that they're trying to get a grasp on. And the first one is that big question of, can the government mandate that employers require employees to be vaccinated?
Right. And so in this case, it's probably useful to distinguish between the federal government and state governments. So our system of government, as established by the U.S. Constitution, generally speaking, delegates to the individual states the right to control and address issues of public health and safety. And so we refer to those powers of the states as their police powers. And so in general, it's the state that has the police powers to address health and safety. And this is well established by precedent from the United States Supreme Court. Many people have heard about the Jacobson versus Massachusetts case from 1905. And it essentially stood for that proposition that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts could pass a law that gave the individual cities and public health departments the ability to impose vaccine mandates. And in that case, it was the smallpox vaccine. So in this case, however, with the Biden order from last week, I think some commentators will view that he's trying to get around that system in our Constitution where the states get to set the rules, and Biden is, the Biden administration is trying to establish a more uniform rule whereby using the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, that the federal government will impose on workplaces the ability to, at least in respect to one of these orders, workplaces with of employers with more than 100 employees, the obligation to either vaccinate or test weekly. And so that's an issue that's interesting and may very likely be challenged by at least one or more states that this could be the federal government overreaching. So, you know, with respect to the federal employees who work for the federal government, I think it's a easier question. Federal government has a lot more leeway in terms of the rules that it imposes on its own workforce. And so I think, generally speaking, the federal government will be able to mandate vaccines for its employees, subject to certain exceptions. We'll talk about those later on.
So when we're talking about the federal government as an employer, it seems like it's, I don't want to say certain, because as attorneys, we never say certain, but it seems as though it's pretty concrete that the federal government as an employer could mandate that its workforce be vaccinated, subject to some exceptions. Would that be correct?
I think that's very likely to be the ultimate holding by any court that were to look at this question. Yeah, I think that's generally correct.
And then when we jump to the federal government's ability to mandate other employers, so not itself, to mandate that those employers require that employees be vaccinated, it sounds like we have that traditional lawyer answer of maybe, but there is a lot of moving pieces here that make it seem as though it'll be challenged in some format. Is that correct?
That's right. And there's really two issues with respect to the federal government using OSHA to implement this vaccine mandate. So the OSHA, as most people will know, is the federal agency that oversees workplace safety and health issues. And of course, safety and health can certainly relate to communicable diseases like COVID. But when the federal government, and namely OSHA, decides to implement a rule like this, there's a process. And the process typically will involve a public notice, an opportunity to comment by the public, and then a very long and extensive give and take in terms of the proposed rule, with all interested parties having a chance to weigh in. And certainly this issue is so important that you could guarantee just a tremendous amount of public input. With this particular instance, however, what President Biden has said is that he's going to skip that whole process. And he's going to instruct OSHA that this is a matter of grave concern, that there's immediate public health issue, and therefore that OSHA can skip this extensive process. And anytime an agency skips public comment, there needs to be a pretty good reason, at least in terms of what the courts have said. And we can assume that one area where states and or employers or other interested parties will challenge the federal government's, OSHA's ability to implement this rule is whether this situation meets that standard. But, you know, is there a grave danger that is posed by, in the way that the president has framed it, the grave danger posed by unvaccinated people? You know, how is it that an unvaccinated person poses grave danger to a vaccinated person? I think the argument will be that, you know, the vaccine was supposed to address this grave danger. And so if you're vaccinated, how can there be a grave danger from an unvaccinated person? So we can anticipate that's going to be one of the arguments. And so I think, you know, these arguments will probably be presented very quickly, almost immediately upon the publication of the rule, whenever that happens. And we'll talk about that a little bit later.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is Rob Brooks, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And if you're just joining us, today we're talking about vaccine mandates at work. Rob's given us an outline and an introduction about the federal government generally and how it's going about or attempting to go about implementing vaccine mandates, both for its own employees and then for employers in a more private and even public setting. I mean, we've talked about the federal government, Rob. What about the state government? Could state governments create mandates that all employers within the state must require that their employees be vaccinated? Is it the same as from a federal standpoint, or would there be differences?
Well, I think the state would states have better constitutional support for taking that kind of action. So as I mentioned a little while ago, the U.S. Constitution delegates to the states the police powers to address public issues of public safety and health. And so if the Maine legislature or any other state legislature decided that there was an issue or an emergency or some situation that demanded or required mandated vaccines for some or all employees, they could pass a law to do that. And in fact, with respect to schools and the like, the states, pretty much every state legislature has passed a law to that effect, that if you want to go to school or if you want to work in a school, depends on the situation, you need to get a vaccine. And they'll list out the vaccines, whether it's for measles, mumps, rubella, and the like. So states, I think, are in a better position to do that. And that's, of course, one of the big objections by many of the governors around the country, that it's the federal government that's sticking its nose, if you will, into the state's business.
So that then leads to this other question that I think is on the top of a lot of other people's minds, which is, you know, the federal government sticking its nose into state business. But what happens when we have a state that's already created laws that are going to restrict any form of a vaccine mandate? And now we have this federal law that requires certain segments of the population to be vaccinated and maintain employment. What happens when the state's saying you can't have a law or rule that requires people to be vaccinated, and the federal government is saying, if you work in these industries or you meet these qualifications, you must be vaccinated?
Yeah, well, this is certainly going to be an issue that the courts will have to address. And namely, it will be what's called the supremacy clause of the Constitution. The U.S. Constitution says the law of all the land, law of the United States, if it conflicts with the state law, will supersede and be supreme, if you will, over the state law. But here, the state's argument would be, hey, we already have in the U.S. Constitution the statement that we, the states, reserve the rights to our police powers for health and safety. So the states will also point to a provision in the U.S. Constitution that says the states get to control this. So this is a sort of a classic constitutional law question. Will the states prevail over the federal government in terms of the interpretation that of the United States Constitution that's being teed up?
It feels as though in the last 18 months, you and I and other practitioners, without regard to what area of the law they practice in, have been looking at the Constitution a lot more than we likely had been throughout the course of the rest of our practice. As we see, I mean, we're relying upon, and you're citing laws from 1905. So when we say unprecedented, it seems pretty realistic that we do find ourselves in a situation where we don't have a ton of guidance, at least from a vaccine standpoint, in the past. Is that correct?
That's right. I mean, there have been vaccines have been litigated for the last 130 years. I mean, as the Jacobson versus Massachusetts case demonstrates, but the volume of those cases is relatively small. I mean, there just haven't been a ton of those kinds of cases. So it'll be interesting to see how things evolve. And one thing that's important to remember is that the Jacobson case is pretty old. You know, 115, 116 years is a long time in the history of this country. And like anything of any issue, the view of the government's ability to regulate individual liberties evolves. So just think about issues like gay marriage and other individual liberties. So whether it's reproductive rights, those issues, you know, 115 years ago, 116 years ago, I'm sure the courts would have generally said those don't exist, those rights. But as we know, in the last 50 years in particular, you know, these individual rights have emerged pretty significantly. And so I think that the perception of, you know, how far the state can go, or the federal government for that matter, to regulate matters of individual health is something that remains an open question. I think so far the states have been given a lot of latitude by the courts to implement various measures about health and safety during the pandemic, although there are some signals that the U.S. Supreme Court is starting to recognize some limitations, as demonstrated by the U.S. Supreme Court striking down several months ago the limitations imposed by the state of New York on gatherings at churches and synagogues. And Justice Gorsuch wrote an opinion where I think he implies or signals that the Jacobson case, Jacobson versus Massachusetts, is a lot narrower in its scope than other courts and commentators have suggested. So stay tuned. This is a really interesting period of time for any lawyer, especially those who look at, who deal with constitutional issues.
Well, it definitely sounds like there are a host of different state and federal ways in which we can see the two laws disagreeing and interacting. We're going to take a quick break, however. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Rob Brooks, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we've been talking about vaccine mandates at work, something that I'm sure is at the top of all of your minds. And if it's not at the top of your minds, it's definitely been plastered across your screen as the media and ourselves included have been talking about the issue. We've been discussing the government's authority to mandate vaccines. Prior to the break, Rob and I discussed state and federal authority and how those two types of authority interact and what we foresee happening in the future as we continue to see mandates taking effect or states creating limitations as to mandates. Later in the program, we're going to talk about best practices as to how to implement potential mandates that you may be subject to as an employer. But for now, Rob, I would love to touch a little bit on President Biden's most recent orders. As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's mid-September. We only recently just got notice of President Biden's mandate. So it seems as though there's a lot of questions that are still up in the air. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. So, yeah, I mean, what we heard from President Biden last week were essentially outlines of things to come. And while an outline is helpful, there are so many questions that were unanswered in his speeches last week and executive orders. So, for instance, with the rule that we're going to talk about with respect to private employers with 100 or more employees. That was just him announcing that he's going to be instructing a federal agency, OSHA, to write a rule and do it fast. And it's got to have these four or five different elements to it. But what he didn't say, or, you know, there are just so many open questions, we'll get to those in a little bit. So there's really nothing to read. Similarly, with respect to the topic or issue of federal contractors, that actually gave us a little more to go on. And there was at least something in writing, an executive order that basically further refined an existing executive order that talked about how anybody, any business that has contracts with the federal government that will have to require vaccination, and there's no testing component here. So, and that starts on or after October 15. So we have a little more specificity there, but even with that, there's a lot of unanswered questions. And so, yeah, we're waiting like everybody else, and we're trying to do our best to forecast how this thing may shake out.
So based off of this discussion, it sounds like we're talking about primarily three categories, if you may. It sounds like we've got federal employees. So when we spoke earlier, those would be the people who are employed by the federal government, where the federal government is acting as the employer, correct?
Correct.
And then we have federal contractors. And I think we're going to get into a dialogue about what that really means, how broad or how narrow that definition potentially is. And then the third category being employers with 100 or more employees, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so let's jump to federal employees. When we're talking about the government, the federal government mandating that the people employed by the federal government are vaccinated, are we just talking about the people who are in Washington, D.C., or is it broader than that?
It's much broader than that. It's anybody who collects a paycheck from the federal government, and they're all over the country, if not the world. So that's a huge percentage of the workforce, except I believe the U.S. Postal Service employees are exempted. And that's certainly a huge number of workers. And according to some critics of this most recent rule or requirement by the federal government, you know, to the extent you had to pick any group of federal employees who has the most interaction with the public, it'd be the Postal Service. So that's an interesting group of people to exclude, and I can imagine that we'll be seeing fact highlighted to those or by those people who intend to challenge these rules.
So we'd be looking at, senators and the judiciary and people who work for the National Park Service, kind of holistically that group?
I think it's that broad. Yeah. And I think actually this executive order may further narrowed what the existing requirement was. So just a few weeks ago, the federal government said that we're going to require if not vaccines for all of our employees, we're going to say if you aren't vaccinated, then we're going to make you mask indoors. We're going to require you to social distance, and we're going to subject you to periodic testing. There were a number of exclusions for that rule, one of which I understand were employees who worked at the White House and perhaps even in Congress. But my understanding is that this most recent order intends to close some of those loopholes, with the notable exception of the postal workers.
So still a really broad group of people. If we jump, though, to the federal contractors, so it's not federal employees now, it's people who contract with them. What group is that going to include, or what type of entities contract with the federal government? Just people who help make defense contracts? Is it just people who are making planes and other military surplus kind of items, or what are we looking at?
Oh, it's very broad. This could collectively cover about one quarter of the U.S. workforce, according to the U.S. Labor Department. So this includes any business that does business with the federal government. It could be in information technology, banking, legal services, construction, manufacturing, and their subcontractors. on those contracts with the government. So this is an extraordinarily broad broad-reaching rule. And so it's worth noting that, again, we've got sort of overlapping, you'll see we'll have overlapping groups here. So, you know, we've got the contractor rule will certainly apply to some companies, and most of those companies will have more than 100 employees. So that, which will be covered by the rule we talk about next, the OSHA rule. So it's a big group of people here. And I think the design of these various vaccine mandates from the federal government is to essentially try to capture as many people as possible in the U.S. workforce. However, it's worth noting that with respect to at least the contractor rule, that you have to have at least some material amount of money, at least material to the federal government. In this case, it's $250,000. So if your contract's less than that, then it would be excluded. Some other notable exclusions would be if you get a federal grant, then that would not trigger application of this rule. And also, it's like a research grant and the like, and subcontractors on those sorts of grants and or smaller contracts would also be excluded.
Now, has this provision already taken effect? Did this go into effect as soon as Biden, gave the announcement, or how does this move forward with regards to either contracts that are already in place, or will it only affect those that are entered into later?
Oh, this is a good question. These, according to the executive order, this new rule that's applicable to federal contractors will go into effect on or after October 15, and namely for those contracts that are created on or after October 15. And I should say not just created, but also renewed or extended after that date. So there has to be, so existing contracts are not covered.
For those of you who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Rob Brooks, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we've been talking about vaccine mandates in the work environment. We've spent some time talking about the interaction between state and federal law in this regard, and we've been talking about President Biden's recent announcement and the different classifications in which he has, I don't want to say proposed, but indicated that a vaccine mandate will go into effect. And Rob, we've talked about federal employees, we've talked about federal contractors, but I think what has people most concerned because of what a big group of people it encompasses is any employer with 100 or more employees. Is that going to be accomplished with an executive order similar to the federal contractor discussion? Or how does President Biden foresee creating a mandate of this fashion?
Yeah, this is, as we touched on earlier, this mandate as applied to the private sector is going to be using the Occupational Safety and Health Administration rulemaking authority. You know, OSHA has the authority to issue rules about that govern the safety of the workplace, and so this is the path that that the administration has chosen to follow. But again, that path has rules, and we talked earlier about how there may be some challenges to the appropriateness of using the OSHA emergency temporary standard process. Again, this requires a grave danger, and generally it's new hazards, and so we've known about COVID-19 since 2019, right? So this is a year and a half coming up on 2 years. So, is this a new hazard? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but certainly that's the pathway forward for this particular rule. And again, we can anticipate litigation immediately upon this rule being announced.
So when does this rule then take effect? Do we have a timeline as to when this is going to become a mandate?
We don't have a specific timeline. I think the people who have worked for the agency and who are working for the government today are implying it's going to be fast. So we're talking maybe a matter of weeks or a couple months before we see something published. The last time OSHA did this of using the emergency temporary standard was in June, so a couple months ago, and that emergency temporary standard applied only to healthcare settings. And that process began, I think, on the first day of President Biden's administration, where he issued an executive order, essentially doing something very similar to what he did last Thursday. He told OSHA, he said, hey, I want you to put out some rules to talk about the workplace and COVID. And it took six months for OSHA to come out with these rules. And by the end of that process, it was limited only to healthcare. So they were forecast to be, you know, every industry nationwide, but then they ended up with something that was pretty narrow, and it didn't involve a mandate. It basically just imposed some workplace safety standards, like, you know, paid time off to get quarantined if you had a positive COVID test, and, you know, how to move people around. And so there was some helpful guidance or rulemaking, but this certainly takes it a step beyond. But I don't anticipate six months is going to be realistic here. I think the federal government, and namely the White House, is going to insist that something get published by OSHA very soon, like a month.
Definitely lots of questions as to timing and implications regarding how this is just going to take effect. And it sounds like we likely will be looking at some legal challenges generally. We're going to take a quick break with that, though. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Rob Brooks, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we're talking about vaccine mandates at work. We've spent time discussing both state and federal ability to create vaccine mandates or to restrict vaccine mandates and how the interaction between state and federal law will move forward. We've discussed President Biden's recent order or orders regarding mandatory vaccines for federal employees, for federal contractors. And right before the break, we are discussing what everyone is waiting, I'd say, on pins and needles for, which is the OSHA guidance concerning employers with 100 or more employees. And Rob, that leads me to some questions just about what that's going to look like. I mean, is this going to apply to individuals who are working from home, who've been working from home throughout this pandemic and who are still working from home? Are we going to be forced to mandate that they have a vaccine even though they don't come in contact with the public?
That's an open question. We don't know what this rule will look like. Will there be what many would view as a common sense exception to somebody who's not coming into the workplace regularly and therefore not likely to infect somebody else? But I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for that kind of common sense exception. I think that the overriding policy goal as expressed by the administration is to get everybody vaccinated with very few exceptions. And so a work from home person who might plausibly say, you know, I think I shouldn't have to get vaccinated because I don't come to the office. Well, if it's not in the rule, then it's not an exception there. And we'll talk about some of the other exceptions in a minute that may in fact be more likely to be a reality.
So we know that this OSHA rule, or we believe that the OSHA rule is going to cover employers with 100 or more employees. if I have 103 employees, should I fire 5 right now and get under that 100 number? Is that full-time, part-time, temporary? What is 100 employees and when are they going to make that determination as to how I count them?
Yeah, so as to your first question, you know, if I have 103 employees, should I fire, you know, 4 or 5 of them just to make sure I stay under the threshold? I don't think any employment lawyer would advise that kind of arbitrary decision-making. Arbitrary is not quite the right word, but it's sort of probably not the best way to run your business. I think that, you know, there, who are you going to fire once you're unvaccinated or vaccinated? You know, it's an open question. And just given the way or the rate at which this issue has evolved in the last 12 months, 18 months, I mean, it could be just another 3 months and the threshold goes from 100 to 50. You know, so I would discourage employers from trying to game their headcount to avoid application of this prospective rule.
So earlier you mentioned that there would be potentially some exceptions to a vaccine mandate generally. And you said, you know, it may, but most likely wouldn't involve people who work from home. What type of potential exemptions could we be looking at?
Yeah, well, certainly see exemptions for people who have medical conditions, and that was expressly recognized in that Jacobson versus Massachusetts case from 1905. So that's, and of course, those sorts of issues, the protection for people with medical issues, disabilities, is embodied in federal law. So even the president can't override a federal law that's been enacted by Congress. And so in this case, it'd be the Americans with Disabilities Act. So that sort of accommodation process that's part of the Americans with Disabilities Act would be part of dealing with any exception for those employees with those conditions. The other status that's very likely to be part of an exemption is a religious exemption. People who have a sincerely held religious belief that they don't want to get the vaccine or can't get the vaccine, and that triggers a similar interactive process with the employee to see if there's some sort of reasonable accommodation that can be worked out. And so that process, we predict, will be fairly tricky. So I guess part of that whole process is distinguishing between the risk presented by a vaccinated employee with an unvaccinated employee. And to the extent you have an unvaccinated employee who's otherwise healthy, if they're not sick, you know, trying to describe them or classify them as presenting, you know, sort of a grave danger to their coworkers can be tricky, especially now that we see that the vaccines seem to be either wearing off or are not as effective against some of the newer variants, as revealed by this recent effort to promote booster shots for people. And so that's an interesting messaging problem for the administration, simultaneously mandate vaccines for unvaccinated people while also encouraging fully vaccinated people to get a booster shot, because the vaccines have worn off. So again, it's an interesting messaging problem for the White House.
One of the things that I think we hear a lot about in the news and just general in conversation is this idea of, well, why would an employer even need this medical information or this health information? Isn't all of that protected by HIPAA? As a lawyer, Rob, as an employer, does HIPAA protect my employees from sharing their vaccination status?
Yeah, HIPAA only applies if you are a healthcare provider or an insurance carrier who handles sort of healthcare information. So HIPAA is a lot narrower than most people think. That said, individuals have privacy rights to their medical information. And so the issue for most employers isn't so much HIPAA, but just getting in infringing on somebody's privacy interest, which of course they can sue over. It's a tort, you know, invasion of privacy. So if you get someone's confidential private information, you know it's private, and you publish it, then you are vulnerable to that kind of claim for invasion of privacy. So with respect to vaccinated status, it's an interesting approach taken by the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Agency. They've said that it's perfectly legal under the employment opportunity laws, namely Title VII and the ADA, to ask employees just this simple question, are you vaccinated? Yes, no. Don't tell me anything else. Just yes, no, are you vaccinated? And so they've taken the position at the EEOC that that's not what we call like an inquiry related to a medical status that might otherwise trigger the ADA and accommodation. Of course, at the same time, they're also saying, oh, but that information is confidential. You should treat it as confidential medical information. So there's a bit of an incongruity there. But in general, I think most practitioners will say it's reasonably safe just to ask, are you vaccinated? Yes, no. But just don't ask anything more than that. You don't want to know the why.
Well, I think that leads to another question that is at the top of employers' minds. And I'm sure they have a whole litany of the questions that are at the tip of their tongue. But when am I going to find this out? I mean, I have some employees, but my goal is to hire more. I'm growing. I'm busy. I need more people. And there's actually not enough people even in the market for me to fill the needs right now. So should I just put on all my posters and all my job advertisements that you have to be vaccinated in order to work here? Do I ask them when I bring them in for an interview, or how do I find out if an applicant is vaccinated or unvaccinated?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of employers may decide, oh, the heck with it. I'm just gonna mandate vaccines for every new employee and every current employee and just get ahead of this. You know, I suspect that's probably what the administration's hoping for, but and that's rational for an employer to say, let's want to get it over with. I'm tired of trying to change my policies every single week. Not vaccinating. But you pointed out there's a shortage of available workers out there for many, many employers. And do you really want to be limiting the number of people who want to work for you? Or who are willing, able to work for you. And I'd say a lot of employers are like, no, we need bodies now, and we can't afford to shrink the pool of eligible workers. And we're seeing healthcare providers, in particular nursing homes and other providers like that, who are closing, you know, because they don't have enough staff, with or without a vaccine mandate. But now you put a vaccine mandate on top of that. I mean, we saw that in the state of Maine. The state had to delay the enforcement of this new healthcare worker vaccine mandate, I think in part because employers are saying we don't have staff, and also because several nursing homes announced their closures taking place in October. So these mandates have real consequences to a lot of businesses who are just trying to stay afloat, and headcount is, is important. I mean, they need people to do the work. With respect to, how do you gather this information? Again, because I alluded to earlier, you want to try to get as little information as you can or need to make your decision. And, yes, are you vaccinated? Yes, no. If somebody comes back and says, I'm not, you might have to say, do you need an accommodation? Yes, no. And if they say, no, I don't need an accommodation and I'm not getting a vaccine, no way, no how, never. Then okay, I think you can end the process and say, okay, we'll move on. This is, it's either assuming you have a vaccine mandate now or ultimately you're subject to one of these rules. So, but once you get into these interactive dialogues with people who have a religious or medical reason for not getting the vaccine, this is where the risk has gone way up for most employers, because you're injecting this dialogue really early on and into the employment relationship when you otherwise never would have. So again, every time you're dealing with an employee's medical or religious beliefs, it's a really tricky area, and you can be sure that if you have to take a position where you're terminating them, or you can't accommodate their medical condition or religion, that person is very likely to become a plaintiff and sue you, or look for a way to sue you.
Unfortunately, it sounds like employers find themselves again between a rock and a hard place. Not the most upbeat place for us to end the segment, but we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBRadio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, Tawny Alvarez, and today our guest is Rob Brooks, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we're talking about vaccine mandates at work. We've talked about how state and federal governments have the jurisdiction and authority to impose vaccine mandates, what would happen if a state law restricted mandates, but the federal law said that they must be put into effect. We've talked about President Biden's proposed orders concerning federal employees, federal contractors, and OSHA's ability to regulate employers with 100 or more employees and what that potentially could look like. Right before the break, we talked a little bit about exemptions to mandates under the Americans with Disabilities Act and Title VII. One thing we haven't talked at all about, Rob, is what about the people who are choosing not to be vaccinated because they've actually already had COVID, that they unfortunately are one of the millions of people who have had COVID, but thankfully recovered.
Yeah, that's sort of like the elephant in the room nobody wants to talk about, at least in this country. And it's not just millions. I mean, I think the CDC and NIH have recently estimated that about 100 million people in the United States, so that's almost one third of the population, has been infected with COVID. So, and we, most people I'm sure have read that just in their own life experience, have understood if you get sick with the disease, you get better, you've got some natural immunity to that. There's been a reluctance by the federal government, the CDC in particular, to recognize that that natural immunity is the same as or as good as vaccinated immunity. And there have been various studies that have been produced to suggest that it's an open question, at least. We just don't know how, maybe there's some immunity, but we don't know how long it's going to last. And, you know, you should look at the vaccine anyway. And then on the other side of this, you know, you've got people who are citing studies from the Cleveland Clinic that show that there's really no benefit to vaccinating people who've already been infected and recovered. You know, Israel released a study just a couple weeks ago that suggests that natural immunity is 27 times more effective than vaccinated immunity. That's 27 times more effective than vaccinated immunity. The number really jumps out. So what do you do with that employee who says, I had COVID, I've got a documented case, I had a positive PCR test, and then I've got, you know, I have treatment, here's my doctor's note that says they treated me for this and I recovered, and oh yeah, here's my antibody test. I don't want to get the vaccine. And, you know, what do you do? Well, I think as an employer in the private sector, you could probably say, I don't care, it's either vaccine or nothing. I don't care, you know. But what is this rule gonna, from OSHA going to say? Or if you're a federal contractor, you know, what do you do? And generally speaking, if the rule doesn't say there's an exception for natural immunity, it's not in there. You know, so is the employer going to get sued for not giving an exemption for natural immunity if the rule from OSHA that ultimately is published doesn't provide for it? Maybe not. I mean, actually, the proper defendant should be the federal government, should be OSHA for publishing an arbitrary rule. But I think there's some comfort to the employer who doesn't want to recognize natural immunity because of this OSHA mandate that is going to be coming out in a rule in a few weeks or a month. But again, this is where if you have people, and there's going to be 100 million people in this country potentially who are saying, why doesn't science work the same way in the US that it works in Israel or France or Ireland or the UK or all these other countries around the world? And that certainly undermines trust in our government agencies who seem to be ignoring that. At least that's what some commentators and other advocates are espousing right now. So it's a tricky situation. I wish we knew how this was all going to unfold. But the only thing that I'm certain of is that things are going to change tomorrow. And so, yeah, this podcast will need to be updated probably pretty soon, by the end of the week.
Well, it is an ever-evolving topic, but I definitely appreciate your willingness to come on the show and for us to have this discussion concerning the topic. I know I've learned something, and I really hope that our listeners have been able to take away some helpful pieces of information concerning where we find ourselves and the employer vaccine mandate question and the regulations surrounding it. So thank you so much for being a guest today, Rob. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Tani. Glad to be here.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Stay tuned for the HR Tip of the Week.
And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, this is Tani Alvarez from Verrill. In the course of the day, there are a plethora of issues across your desk, from questions regarding hiring, discipline, termination. If you don't perform payroll on a regular basis, how aware are you of the number of employees you employ? It's not a question as to whether bigger is better, but instead important to know because the number of individuals you employ could affect specific state and federal laws in which you have rights and responsibilities under. Focusing purely on federal law, any employer who employs one or more individuals is required to comply with the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act, the Equal Pay Act, the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act, also known as USERRA, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, or OSHA, Section 1981 of the Civil Rights Act of 1966, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of race, the National Labor Relations Act, the Immigration Reform and Control Act, which requires employers to verify identities and employment eligibility, and the Fair Credit Reporting Act. That's a lot of statutes just for one employee under federal law. If you have questions as to the responsibilities you have as a result of your current size, contact a member of Verrill's labor and employment team to further discuss.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.